Hi everyone, welcome again to the Associate Nephilic Cricket Podcast. We've had a bit of a gap since our last episode, but we're back on board, and to do this episode with me, as usual, is my regular co-host, Andrew Nixon. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Ross. How are you, buddy?
Got a few things to talk about today. We've got an interview with Tim Cutler from the Hong Kong Cricket Association and a whole bunch of little tournaments to review. But we'll start with the big one, which was the last one we talked about, Andrew, which is the World 2020 qualifiers. And not a full review, but a bit of a roundup of where various teams are. I think some teams played much better than we expected. Some played a fair bit worse. I think maybe we'll start with the two that did play a bit worse, which is Ireland and Afghanistan. Not a great tournament for either of those teams.
No, I think especially for Ireland playing on sort of home turf. During one of the post-match presentations, William Portfield did actually say that it wasn't like they were playing on home turf. Obviously, a lot of the players play in England, and I think the wickets in Ireland are just subtly different to the wickets in England. So perhaps there is a little bit of something to that. But you know, they've sort of got through, but not as one of the finalists. And to some extent, I think Ireland and Afghanistan not making the final is quite important. It shows it's the associate cricket isn't just about those two teams.
Yeah, Afghanistan might have made it a little bit easier than they did. They had two no results, which hurt them. They played fairly well at the start of the tournament and then lost the match to Hong Kong in fairly bizarre circumstances in the final over. And they never quite looked like they were going to make it, but they didn't really play that well for a fair bit of the tournament.
Yeah, and obviously they lost a man in the group stage as well, who obviously one of the surprise teams. And when you have those, I think as we said in our preview, a couple of no results, a bit of a surprise, and something very interesting could happen, and that's exactly what happened. It's one of the few predictions we did get right about the tournament.
Teams that played fairly well, Scotland and the Netherlands, and Scotland particularly looked pretty strong throughout.
Yeah, I think Scotland, certainly the best team in the tournament. They went through the round robin stage. They lost a couple of games, but the games they did win, they were sort of pretty convincing in doing so. And then the playoffs was also they beat Hong Kong in the semi final, and the final was unfortunately washed out. But I think Scotland definitely the best team in the tournament, and then Netherlands as well played very well. They recovered from losing Ahsan Malik quite early on. There was a bit of a clampdown on bowlers with suspect actions during the tournament, which obviously set them back a bit, but recovered quite nicely. And I think both teams obviously got to the final. They can be very happy with their tournaments.
Hong Kong are included in this group, but Hong Kong, Namibia, and PNG played okay at times, but they were just consistency was a bit of an issue, particularly for Hong Kong.
Yeah, obviously, their tournament started with that shock defeat by Jersey. And then they lost a couple of other games. They seemed to sort of alternate between playing poorly and then playing really well. There was no a distinct lack of consistency there, and obviously lost in the semi final to Scotland. But they've qualified, and I think it is a slight improvement on where they were in the last qualifier. And they've done so in conditions that aren't completely familiar to them. And I think despite that inconsistency, I think they will be a little bit pleased with the tournament.
And the other two, I guess, they keep being so close, and they've never quite managed to make the global tournament.
Yeah, I think we saw just how much it meant to the players after those defeats in those qualifying playoffs for both Namibia and Papua New Guinea. You saw the players in tears after the game, and it was a good example of what cricket at this level can mean to the players. It's do or die. Qualifying for the World 2020 would have meant extra money, perhaps being able to make the players more professional, and missing out is it was a big deal. And when you look at it, I think we said it before the tournament that we would expect maybe four of the teams to come from Group B, and that's what happened in the end. Perhaps not necessarily expected, but yeah, I think Namibia and Papua New Guinea, you really have to feel for them, and you have to feel for Kenya as well. Lost out on the very last day of the round robin stage. You wait until the last day, possibly being able to top the group, and then they didn't even finish in the top four.
Yeah, Oman were obviously the big shock team in the tournament. It was said that they were probably the least professional setup, but actually, in many of the matches, the way they batted, they were one of the more professional-looking teams. Certainly, they chased particularly well, and they set up matches particularly well.
Yeah, Oman were, you know, as you say, the big surprise package of the tournament. And I was at their first game against Kenya, and they didn't play at all well in that tournament. The margin of victory was only 9 runs to Kenya, but Oman never even looked in it. And if you'd have told me after that match that, you know, Oman would qualify for the World 2020, I'd have laughed at you. And you know, but you know, they proved me wrong. I think having Derek Pringle on board has certainly helped. You know, there's times it looks like, you know, some of Derek Pringle's ex-colleagues in the media makes it look like Derek Pringle scored all the runs and took all the wickets himself. But obviously he's been a big boost to the team, and he's helped bring although they're not a particularly professional outfit, he's brought something of a professional approach to the side.
Jersey were again a team that we thought would struggle. They came away with 2 wins though, and they were beaten fairly easily a couple of times, but they had in general a fairly good tournament. As much as anything, they just really don't have the depth.
Yeah, I think that was it. Once you sort of got rid of that top three or maybe top four, then there wasn't really much to that batting lineup. That was obviously something they'll need to work on. And the bowling was a bit sort of one-paced. There wasn't really anybody who was an out-and-out pace bowler. But, you know, they'll learn a lot. And they'll go back with their heads held high. You know, they beat two teams that played in the last World 2020. And, yeah, they'll be certainly delighted with their performance.
The USA, they'll look back, I think, and probably have done so, and say, well, if we hadn't have bowled first against Nepal, we might have made the playoffs, and then who knows, because they finished pretty well. But as usual, their lack of preparation probably hurt them.
Yeah, I think their prediction was exactly what Peter De La Penna said on this podcast. You know, he said they'd start poorly and play well towards the end, and that's exactly what happened. And yeah, that game against Nepal, where you know they chose to bat first rather than bowl first, I think that really, really set them back. You know, that was the only game Nepal won, and you know, really looking at how Nepal played throughout the rest of the tournament, you know, USA were really, really letting themselves down in that match.
The other three teams in this tournament all played pretty badly. Nepal, I didn't see, but their results are going to speak for themselves.
Yeah, I only saw Nepal on TV once, but yeah, they were pretty below par in that match. There was some good fielding from it, but again, the batting let them down. The bowling wasn't overly impressive. Sampal Karmi, who bowled so well in the World Cup qualifier last year, just didn't look at all himself. And again, as we've seen in the past, some of the bowling changes were a bit odd. Paris Kadka didn't really choose the best bowlers for the match situation. He seemed to have decided on where he was going to make his bowling changes ahead of time, and then not adjust those tactics. But yeah, I think, you know, we do sometimes come to expect this from Nepal when they're playing outside of Asian conditions.
Yeah, I mean, the batting is obviously the biggest problem. They made 122 as their highest score of the tournament, and you're not going to win many games if that's the best you can come up with. And there was a heap of scores of less than 100 as well.
Yeah, the batting set them down a lot, as we say. But in general, I think the lesson they've learned is that they need much more experience in non-Asian conditions. That's what's let them down in New Zealand last year and now in Ireland this year.
UAE and Canada. The UAE defeated Canada in their game, but other than that, in the matches I saw them, they were listless and really poor in this tournament.
Yeah, UAE and Canada both were just terrible, you know, it has to be said. And UAE looked like a completely different team without Karim Khan. I've seen one of the other sort of old timers in the team has retired recently as well. I forget who off the top of my head. So they've got a lot of rebuilding to come, and going off how their under 19 team has been playing recently, it's not looking good for the future either. So you know, there's a real rebuilding effort needs to go on there, and it's not as if they don't have the facilities. They've got probably the best facilities of any non-test nation, and a lot of work needs to be done there, and the same for Canada to some extent. You know, they played you're terrible. Obviously, you know, they had the problem with Nicol Dutta ahead of the tournament where they play in the CPL, and then the revoked his no object certificate. They decided not to pick him anyway to punish him, which was a bit silly. He was their best player. And again, they also kind of do have some young players coming through, but you know, the old players in the team aren't doing what they used to. You know, Rizwan Chima particularly, and you know, there's a rebuilding effort needs to go on there as well.
Yeah, not having Dutta, given some of their batting scores were reasonable enough to defend, they scored 172 against the Netherlands. So it's clearly the bowling was their biggest issue, and maybe with Dutta there, they would have won a couple of games and it could have been a different story. But if you're going to spite yourself by not picking players that you have available to you, then you get what you deserve.
Yeah, certainly.
Let's move on, Andrew. There's other matches to talk about. I think we'll start with the World Cricket League Championship matches between Nepal and Scotland, which followed on fairly closely from the World 2020 qualifiers. And one of these matches was quite close, but Scotland came away with two wins.
Yeah, that first game did look like, you know, what happened to this Nepal during the World 2020 qualifier. They had Anil Mandal score 100 off 93 balls, Paris Kadko scored 70 from 55, and they just fell short. You know, they needed to score, it was reduced to a 36 over match, and they needed to score 236 to win in 36 overs, and they got really close. They got to 232 for 5. And when you actually look at the Nepal innings after 20 overs, I don't think they'd even reached 100, so perhaps it was the same Nepal that played in the World 2020 qualifier. They need time to build an innings, and you don't necessarily have, you'd have more time than you think in 2020, but you don't have as much time as you'd like. Nepal obviously very good at building an innings in the longer form of the game, as we saw in this match against Scotland, but in the shorter form, not so.
This is actually something that I think was true of a lot of the teams in the World 2020 qualifiers as well. And there were very few players that could score quickly and not take a lot of risks. And there was an awful lot of cricket, or a lot of batting that involved just trying to hit over the top to make big scores and getting themselves out in the process.
Yeah, I think so. There's this sort of, I think it's a myth that 2020 is best suited to associates. And I think we actually think 50-over cricket is probably better for associates. 2020 is much more of a professional game, if that's not a bit of a contradiction. You need to be more aware of a game situation. You need to be more tactically astute. You need to be able to adjust how you're playing the game on the fly more than you do in 50-over cricket. And I don't think associate teams quite have that. You do see that with Scotland and with Afghanistan and to some extent with Ireland, but you don't necessarily with the next lot of teams down, and Nepal are one of those teams. The second World Cricket League Championship match was a bit of a rain-ruined one, but Nepal batted first, scored 167. They were bowled out five balls from the before the 50 overs were up, and I think what we saw here was once the top order went, the rest of the batting order struggled. You know, obviously, you lose the likes of Mandal, Mallah and Kadkar, and Nepal tend to struggle, and such was the case here as well. And then rain reduced the Scotland innings to 22 overs, and they needed to score 109, and then they knocked the runs off in 14 overs. Cross scored 51 from 37 balls to win the game for them, and Scotland obviously two wins from two, and Nepal not looking too good in the World Cricket League Championship either.
There were a whole bunch of under-19 qualifiers and other under-19 tournaments as well. I think perhaps we'll start with the European under-19s, Andrew.
This was held in Jersey, and Jersey, Ireland, Netherlands, Scotland, and Scotland took part. Only four teams playing this. This was a 16 tournament the last time it took place in 2013. Scotland ended up winners just on net run rate. Scotland and Ireland split the game as they played against each other and both beat Jersey and Netherlands in the four matches they played against, and then Jersey beat the Netherlands in twice. I think that obviously saw Scotland go straight to the Under-19 World Cup at Ireland playing a repechage tournament, which has been moved to, I think, Malaysia. It was originally scheduled for Nepal. I think the real story here is the Netherlands, to some extent. They were completely outplayed by all three of the other teams, you know, including Jersey, and the Netherlands will, you know, really be worried about that. For as we were saying with the UAE, you know, there's a lot of rebuilding that needs to go on in the Netherlands, in the Dutch, you know, the Dutch setup, and going on the strength of their under 19 performance there. You know, this is the same I think as the under 15 side pretty much that I saw back in 2012, and that team had a bit of a way to go, and it's still the case now, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a real shock to lose to Jersey, especially as Jersey was a fair bit below full strength, even with quite a few players playing in the World 2020 qualifiers at the same time.
Yeah, John DeGeno, who became a bit of a star at that tournament, obviously would have played in a normal full strength Jersey under 19 squad. So yeah, a real big shot for the Dutch there.
The Americas under 19 qualifier was also played.
Yeah, this was originally supposed to be a 4-team tournament. Suriname pulled out; they weren't able to get, I think, transit visas in time. This is something that does occasionally crop up in sort of in regional tournaments. I think it's something the ICC perhaps needs to step in and, you know, advise the teams on and tell them what they need to do as regards visas. But, you know, obviously the three teams that did play, Canada, USA, Bermuda. Canada won all four of their matches, and then USA and Bermuda split theirs. So Canada go to the Under-19 World Cup, USA go to a repechage. You know, there's not really much to say about this tournament. I think everybody would have expected that result going into it.
There was also an Under-19 tournament played in Asia. It was, as I think you tweeted, not promoted anywhere near as much as past Asian Under-19 tournaments.
Yeah, there wasn't really an announcement even on any or ACC or ICC website until I think a day or two before the tournament started, where, you know, in the past there'd have been, you know, previews and such on the tournament match reports. There aren't even any match reports available at the moment. I think this is a sign of things to come in Asia, unfortunately. As we record, there's still one round of matches to come, but it looks like Afghanistan are going to walk away with this. You know, they've got four wins out of four, and Nepal and Malaysia are on three wins out of four. But Afghanistan's net run rate is such that you really don't see anybody catch them. So I think it's probably safe to say Afghanistan have won this. This isn't a qualifier for anything. Obviously, the Asian teams have already been decided for the Under-19 World Cup and the repechage tournament. So, but obviously, it's nice to see this tournament still take place. We were worried that there weren't going to be any other ACC tournaments this year after the takeover of our operations by International Cricket Council, but you know, this has happened. But again, I think the real story here is the lack of promotion of it, and, you know, what does this say about the future of the Asian development region? It's always been the best, and perhaps no longer.
By the Under-19 tournaments, there was a non-official tournament of Under-19 cricket played in Belgium between the host nation as well as Germany, France and Switzerland. And again, we always say this all the time, but it's good to see these types of tournaments taking place.
Yeah, you know, especially, you know, these teams are no longer in the formal European structure. Obviously, Switzerland not even an ICC member anymore. Yeah, obviously great to see these tournament players. And Germany, they were very successful. They had I think they've got a very good youth setup there. I could well see them being let back into the sort of official regional tournaments in the near future, and they certainly deserve it.
Yeah, the women also did well. There was another European women's tournament played, and I think Italy came away with this one as well, but it was Germany had an impressive run.
Yeah, and then after the tournament was over, Germany actually beat Italy in a 30-over friendly. But in the actual tournament itself, Italy won quite convincingly, as they did last year and the year before as well. And I think it's probably time ICC Europe let them play against the likes of Ireland, Scotland and the Netherlands in the official Division 1 tournament. I think, you know, they've earned that right now. They've dominated in this tournament for 3 years in a row now. And well, they need to be tested more than they are being.
There's a bunch of small tournaments we'll cover in a minute, but we might swing back to Ireland because there was a couple of significant matches that Ireland played against Australia, both the men's and the women's. Perhaps start with the women's T20s. This was streamed on the Cricket Ireland website. Ireland, I thought, played pretty well from what I saw of it. They bowled fairly well. They managed to keep the Australian totals down, except for a little bit of slogging in the last over or so, when particularly by Grace Harris. But the batting was fairly weak. The top three didn't score a huge number of runs. There was only a couple of 20s, and except for Kim Garth, who was probably their best bowler as well, and who was batting too low to really make a big difference, that they never really were in any of the chases.
Yeah, you look at the sort of the openers throughout the tournament. It was Claire Shillers and then Isabel Joyce. The first match they scored 3 and 4. The third match both were out for ducks. And the second match, Joyce scored 24. And I think Ireland actually started that second match quite well in their innings and then just fell by the wayside once Joyce was out. I think it's a case of the bowling is doing very well, but the batting leaves a lot to desire. It was only really that third match where Australia run away with the bat, where they scored 186. The other two matches, 131, and, 140 against, conceding that against the best team in the world isn't, it's not, it's not too bad really.
Yeah, I think too the with the bowling, they don't have any out and out pace bowlers, and their spinners probably struggled a little bit, but in Lucy O'Reilly and Kim Garth, they definitely had some good, solid medium pace bowling that they keep full. And I think, judging by how they played here, they're pretty well placed for the World 2020 qualifiers at the end of the year.
Obviously Garth in the second match took 3 for 17, which is very good for 2020 cricket. Only went 4.25 and over. I think there's work to be done, but there's something there to build on, and I think that's what's important, and you'd expect them to do very well in those qualifiers at the end of the year.
In the men's match, they played a one-day international against Australia. It was rain-affected, as perhaps things often are in Ireland, although surprisingly not the World 2020 qualifiers, except for the final day.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good that they got a game in. Even like 2 days before the match, the forecast was for rain all day and practically no prospects of play. But the groundsman at Stormont did an excellent job in actually getting getting play underway. Australia started very well. He had a 139 partnership for the first wicket in 22 overs, and then sort of drifted off a bit and only scored 222 from. Rain finished their innings after 40.2 overs. I think what set Ireland back was they lost both Porterfield and Sterling very early on in the reply. Porterfield was out for 4, Sterling was out for a duck. Ed Joyce and Niall O'Brien batted well, but then once those two were out, they put on 80 odd for the third wicket, and then once those two were out, the rest of the batting lineup just folded really. Some work to be done there for Ireland.
Yeah, it was a similar sort of batting through the low middle order that we saw in the World 2020 qualifiers, where they just weren't quite scoring fast enough and were losing too many wickets. And as you say, there's definitely some work to be done in the Irish squad, leading certainly towards the World 2020 next year to work out what's going on through that section of the middle order.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other sort of major tournaments that was played was the Pacific Games, both the men's and the women's tournament there. Papua New Guinea's men's team was somewhat below strength, and that caused a couple of interesting results for the men's tournament there.
Obviously this was played during the World 2020 qualifier, so Papua New Guinea were never going to be at full strength, and then Fiji opted not to play in it as well, so we were left with Papua New Guinea not at full strength. Vanuatu played at full strength, and Tonga and New Caledonia, both non-ICC members. Pacific Games is to some extent my favourite cricket tournament, because it's just so obscure and you get all these teams that you don't really see very often. New Caledonia only ever play in this tournament. New Caledonia, as we expected, lost every game. They were only beaten by Tonga, so that left Vanuatu and Papua New Guinea. And then Vanuatu beat Papua New Guinea in both the matches they played against them. I think it's the first matches Papua New Guinea have lost in the Pacific Games for quite some time. So they had to play off against Tonga to get to the final, and they beat Tonga quite convincingly. And then in the final, Vanuatu won by 4 wickets. This is the first time Papua New Guinea haven't won gold. Vanuatu got a silver medal back in 1979, but since then it's all been like a gold medal or a bronze medal. So to get the gold medal, first time that, as I say, that Papua New Guinea haven't won gold, you know, they'll be delighted. But as you say, it was a weakened Papua New Guinea side, and I'm sure the next time this tournament takes place in 4 years' time, Papua New Guinea will be hoping to get their gold medal back.
The women's tournament, there was an equally big surprise, particularly because the Papua New Guinea side there was much closer to full strength, and they are the East Asia Pacific champions, but they still didn't win the gold.
No, and this tournament actually doubled as a qualifier for the 2018 Women's World 2020. Obviously, that the women's still is every 2 years. New Caledonia played in this. It's the first time their women's side have played. Again, lost every game. So Samoa, Vanuatu, Fiji and Papua New Guinea made it to the playoffs. Eventually, Papua New Guinea and Samoa played in the final. It was a very close match, the final. Samoa won by 3 runs. And then in the bronze medal match, Fiji beat Vanuatu by 12 runs. And Fiji's innings owed a lot to one player. Murialo scored 72 from 36 balls out of an innings of 118. Obviously, Papua New Guinea lost in the final. Both Papua New Guinea and Samoa do go to the next stage of qualification, where they'll play a tri-series with Japan. I think either late this year or early next year, and then the winners of that will go through to the global women's qualifier in 2017. A very successful first ever women's cricket tournament in the Pacific Games. The women will play every Pacific Games from now on.
There's a bunch of small tournaments to talk about. We'll run through them as possibly to be expected. We don't really necessarily have scorecards for these, but it's worth always generally mentioning that they occurred. The inter-insular between Guernsey and Jersey was played, and perhaps surprisingly, Guernsey won by 5 wickets.
And Guernsey played very much a transitional team as well. A lot of their older players have bowed out of international cricket in recent years, and they can be very proud of that 5 wicket win. And it's obviously it's an old rivalry. It's good to see this carried on every year, in and amongst ICC commitments. And Jersey will be a little bit disappointed. Jersey weren't quite at full strength either, but obviously Jersey are ranked higher in the World Cricket League than Guernsey. Guernsey are set to play in the next World Cricket League tournament next week, and they'll take a lot of confidence from this match into that tournament.
The Sadari Cup, the women's T20s between Singapore and Malaysia, was also played, and Malaysia came out on top 2-1 in the three-game series.
Again, I think Singapore and Malaysia have done very well at keeping that rivalry going, and obviously now with the women's as well as the men's tournament. So I think this is a case where it's good to see the game being played.
There was also a Baltic Cup game between Estonia and Lithuania, which Estonia won the 3-match series 2-1. And that is absolutely the only thing I know about that match. But again, it's always, particularly for these little sub-regional sides, good that they can get matches in.
Yeah, especially the ones that aren't even part of the ICC, not part of the ICC tournament structure. So yeah, absolutely superb that match went ahead.
And there were two women's tournaments in Africa as well. Tanzania hosted Mumbai Cricket Club and Nigeria, and lost to Nigeria, possibly not with their full strength side in their first game, but again, scorecards for this one has been a little bit difficult to come by.
Yes, Yeah, I think we should not say too much about Alice Thorne, other than, again, it's good that he was taking the place.
And Botswana hosted a Four Nation Under 19 tournament as well, which included Zimbabwe and Namibia and Mozambique. And Zimbabwe dominated this tournament again for this is the second year I think this has been running. So, once again, there aren't a lot of scores coming out for it. And I think that's all the cricket that's been played since we last spoke, Andrew. Joining us now on the show is Tim Cutler, the CEO of the Hong Kong Cricket Association, to chat about the Sixes for Nepal tournament that was on a couple of weeks ago, as well as some development issues in Hong Kong and the World 2020 qualifiers, which they successfully qualified for in July. Welcome on the show, Tim.
Thanks for having me, Ross. How are you?
Good, thank you. Let's start with the Sixes for Nepal. It was played at the Kowloon Cricket Club a couple of weeks ago. Tell us a bit about the tournament.
Yes, well, we were thinking, well, what can we do to help, really? It's been just a tragedy in the truest sense what's happened in Nepal. There's a real rich history between both the countries, the Nepalese involvement with the British Army since Hong Kong in the 1840s, and there's also a real strong relationship between the two cricketing nations. I think we've improved and sort of come up through the national ladders very closely over the last couple of years. So we thought, well, what does Hong Kong do well? What does Hong Kong cricket do well? We do six as well. So we flew six of the Nepalese team out for what was going to be a weekend of sixes, which ended up being just a day when one of the days was rained off. So it was great. We had six teams with people from the Hong Kong national team, the Nepalese national team, the Hong Kong Cricket Association Dragons, which is the all-Chinese men's representative team, and then other Premier League players. So it was a great day.
And it was good to see sixes being played in Hong Kong. The annual tournament was cancelled a couple of years ago. Is that being revived?
That is one of our key things that we really want to get right. And yes, this will be the third year it won't have been on. It was a lot of effort I put in the early days of the job to get a major sponsor, which was the key part for government funding to be unlocked. But unfortunately, that didn't eventuate. But in its place, we're going to be hosting an East Asia T20 Cup, getting China, Japan, and hopefully Korea down as well to have a tournament over that same weekend.
And that'll be, Hong Kong will be involved in that as well?
Yes, Hong Kong and Hong Kong Dragons as well, the all-Chinese team. So really trying to get them exposed to some better cricket and get them skilled up.
Let's turn to the World 2020 qualifiers. It was a very interesting tournament for Hong Kong. On the one hand, they had victories over Ireland and Afghanistan and outplayed them both and beat them fairly comfortably. Well, not so comfortably for Afghanistan, it was quite a tight game. But on the other hand, they made it very hard for themselves by losing matches that they really expect to win. What do you put those losses down to?
It is a tough one. I think you, Andrew, and Peter almost called it to the match, really, saying that there's that X factor of Hong Kong cricket. On their day, on our day, we can beat anyone, as we've shown with our ranking now at number 11, now that we're in the T20I rankings tables. I really don't know what to put my finger down on. You can see how they pull together for these big matches. But the stumbles against Jersey, I think, was almost a good thing to give the boys perhaps a bit of a reality check going into the tournament. But again, the USA, well, I didn't play badly the USA in being there, watching a guy like Stanford bat. There's a lot of talent in that team, so I don't know. I don't quite think that there's that much to worry about in losing those matches, because again, that Jersey batted very well in trying conditions, but I think your best, Charlie Burke could probably talk a lot more about that than me, being there and watching the ladder matches. The talent's there. It's just a matter of just bringing it all together a lot more consistently.
And is that something that you think can be achieved with more funding and more professional development and that kind of stuff?
Oh, definitely. From a Hong Kong league point of view, yeah, that's where the majority of these players have come from and where they've learnt their cricket. And we have to be doing as much as we can to make sure that the cricket that they're playing in Hong Kong is what's preparing them best for international cricket and not having to go overseas. either university is one thing that's sometimes unavoidable, but not having to go and play overseas cricket to get them in shape for international cricket. So that's the funding and facilities for us is critical to the future of Hong Kong cricket taking the next step. You know, I don't want us to look at 11th and think that's as good as we're ever going to get. We should be setting that as our benchmark now and stepping further. But yeah, the challenge for us in Hong Kong is facilities more than anything. Funding is one thing, but actually having access to grounds. So even right now, trying to get our Premier League versus Sunday League versus Saturday League right, because you're not playing them all at the same time. So you've got players that can potentially play in all three formats, but you don't really want your Premier League players playing in Saturday cricket, which is a more social form of cricket. But because we've only got five grounds to basically use, trying to work them out to make sure that players are playing the right cricket and the highest level of cricket possible is a really complex operation.
And other plans for professionalism? Are you planning to use some of the ICC funding that's increased to put players on professional contracts?
Well, we have 9 central contracts. Yeah, we're in our third year now of central contracts. That started with when we were admitted as an elite sport into the Hong Kong Sports Institute 3 years ago. And so that's what that funding was used to. But once we lost that elite sports status a year later, that money, well, the contracts have continued, but it's actually been the HKCA that took that bill, so that comes out of our coffers. So whilst a lot of ICC and government funding is linked to particular projects or positions, there is some leftover scorecard grant that might be called by ICC or other funding in government that we can use what we deem fit and player payments is one of those.
And I guess because the team's young and when you look at the scorecard grant, Hong Kong doesn't necessarily do particularly well on a number of factors other than performance. Is there a trade-off for you to say, well, we really need to take advantage of this opportunity where the team's playing well to promote cricket within Hong Kong and spend money on development versus developing the players as professionals while they're in their prime?
I think it's any and all of those that you've mentioned. And my job and why I'm in here is to be able to balance those priorities and how much we put into that elite development and the pathways leading to there. The domestic leagues and the actual development here from absolute grassroots, but actually developing the brand of cricket in Hong Kong as well to get more and more people interested in it. So yes, we should be using the great success of the national team in every way that we can, and that's in attracting sponsors and attracting community involvement as well. So everything you said is right. We should be concentrating on development as well, and that's I'm trying to make sure that we leverage the performance of the national team as much as possible.
And what other plans for development are ongoing within Hong Kong Cricket Association at the moment? I noticed you're hiring cricket officers, so there's obviously an expansion going on.
That's good. That's off the website today. That's good that you're up to date. Yes. Well, there's been a little bit of a reshuffle within the development team, which is great. Charlie Burke is going to be able to spend more time working with the development team now. Hopefully we'll be getting more coaching hours for the national team away from him so he can take a true director of cricket role, concentrating more on the development program. And we have a development manager that sits under him. He's one of the Chinese guys who's come up from an entry-level position in the office now and has now worked his way up to development manager. So it's great that we're able to develop staff along there. But, yeah, there are two more offices, so they'll be intended to be out there in Chinese schools and running community programs that we're just at the moment really repolishing and reinvigorating, really, to be focused. And rather than just having them out there just going where they can and it's having no real strategy, we're actually going to build a real strategy around those plans.
Engaging the Chinese community, is that particularly challenging for you guys?
Yes. It's a sport that they don't, unfortunately, get to see a lot of. Where it's played, I'm not sure if you've been to Hong Kong, but the Hong Kong Cricket Club and Kowloon Cricket Club, for example, it's not one of those suburban grounds that you just walk past and watch a game of cricket. There are very few cricket grounds in Hong Kong where people would just wander past and passively get engaged with. So everything that they see is what we show them, basically what they see on TV. So to actually engage them with a sport that they don't know a lot about, and what they do know may be negative, either linked to British colonialism, or even looking at it and saying, well, yeah, I've seen some people play that game, but that's the game that all the subcontinental, all the white kids all play, and there's no Chinese kids, so I don't even look at that. So from an actual product and image point of view, there's a lot of work that we need to do, that I need to do, and actually basically relaunching cricket in Hong Kong for a Hong Kong audience. And if you look at the work that Japan cricket has done with Japan Cricket Blast, all the work being done in Brazil and PNG, with the three great presentations that were given in Barbados, the ICC conference, there's a lot that can be learned from actually really tailoring a program to a local community. And Japan, they've based it around the love for the city where they're playing in Sanol, that doesn't have a professional baseball or football team. So they're looking at really engaging the community there, looking at the pride in the city. Brazil, it's all around fun. You know, they've got these basically street kids or kids that live in shanty towns, basically enjoying cricket as a means of character building and developing friendships and learning life skills through it, just through the fun factor. And I think it's all too easy sometimes to just forget that cricket's supposed to be fun, and that's something that I think we can really harness here in Hong Kong, the fun of playing cricket, and then everything else follows in suit. So yes, it's been a struggle with the Chinese community. There's been a lot of hard work. Our president, Rodney Miles, has put a lot of personal time and efforts in partnering with the MCC and working with China as well, but also really pushing hard for that Chinese cricket development. We've got two Chinese men's teams in our Saturday League who come together, and the best Chinese players are picked in the Dragons, who are now playing in the Sunday League this year, and our ladies set up as well, which is a lot younger. They've only been around. They were set up for the 2010 Guangzhou Asia Games. So really, that setup has been around for less than a decade. So that's except half of that team is Chinese. So that's almost something that we need to expand as well. Maybe girls cricket is where it will be with Chinese engagement, and then it will go from there. But yeah, it's something that I'm thinking long and hard about at the moment, about how we change the engagement with the local community.
The women's team, I guess, is quite interesting because they have quite a close rivalry with China and Thailand in the region. They've been competing for places the World 2020 qualifiers, which unfortunately they missed out on this time. But in East Asia, generally, women's teams have more developed faster than the men's teams in other sports. So is that something that you see potentially that's going to be the case?
It's clear, isn't it? Really, you look at something like football or the Soccer World Cup, to see America win it. America is a very, very young football nation, at least from an elite point of view. You know how much is actually played there, but to focus on it. And when it's focused on from a World Cup and an Olympics point of view, I know they're using the O word already, to see how engaged a nation can be. But yeah, from the ladies' point of view, yeah, the Chinese team are great. They're going to the World T20 qualifiers, and I really hope that they make it. I think that would be great for the sport in the region in general. But yeah, look, I think you're right. Maybe they're generally the ones that have developed faster. So from our point of view as well, there's got to be a lot more focus on them too. Not that there was any less focus, but I mean, there could be a particular focus.
Mentioned China a couple of times. To what degree are they part of your remit, given especially the ICC would like to develop a game there, and Hong Kong obviously has a fairly close relationship with the mainland?
Yeah, they're fairly close. They are actually part of China officially. There is no official link between Hong Kong and China, but unofficially we do a lot of work in helping them with their grounds development, with player training, and with international tours as well, because in general there's not a lot of money in the pot there to get the ladies travelling around, nor the men's. So yeah, it's unofficial, but we're very close to the Chinese Cricket Association.
And I guess in line with that, I wanted to talk about the grounds. You mentioned that they're a huge issue for development. They're also a bit of an issue for hosting the iCup and the WCL games. What solution do you have there, and is Guangzhou a possibility in that space?
Guangzhou could be a possibility, well, was always a possibility because it's a great facility. It's a purpose-built international cricket stadium and it's 2 hours away. The problem being, A, it's not in Hong Kong, and B, running an international event in China then brings with it all the legislative and bureaucratic loopholes, also, I should say, hoops that you'd be having to be jumped through. But really, I want this to be played in Hong Kong. You know, this is a great occasion that we're going to be hosting the first ever one-day internationals in T20Is in Hong Kong. And our third ground, which is called Mission Road, at the moment, it's sort of a default name that's been around for a few years, has actually been approved as a one-day international ground. It was approved back in 2006 before a few changes were made, which would have meant that it might have been too small now with the new rules. So we're working very closely with government. We've actually been great about getting that up to speed and then getting a final tick off from the ICC. So we'd be looking to play the World Cricket League and the T20Is against Scotland there. And then we're looking at options with the ICUP because we have a little bit more freedom there. So whether Kowloon, the Hong Kong Cricket Club, who's going through a bit of construction at the moment, so it might be at Mission Road for that as well. But yeah, I'm hoping for that all to be in Hong Kong and to really celebrate that, engaging the Scottish community and getting the sponsors involved and using that as another opportunity for people to come down and see what cricket is at the elite level.
And there's been talk for a number of years about developing a major cricket ground in Hong Kong and the government's support for that. Is that still in line, and is there a time frame for that perhaps getting off the ground?
Yes, we've got two international level grounds that are in the works. There's an area up in the New Territories called Ma On Shan, which is Whitehead Bay, which will have a combined crickets and baseball area there, so it'll be quite open. I guess it would be a similar feel to maybe Indianapolis, where there's a couple of grounds side by side. But yeah, that'll be an international standard facility there. That's the timeline on that. We're looking at 3 to 4 years. The good thing is that they'll be developing that first, before all of the buildings and whatnot around the area, but then there's also the roads and the feasibility studies that are being done there. The big one is Kai Tak, the Kai Tak Multi-Purpose Sports Complex, which is in the plans and has now had sign-off from the legislative council here about the pre-construction rights, which was a long drawn-out process. And I feel for Jonathan McKinley, who's the Deputy Secretary for Home Affairs, all the meetings you have to go through to get that signed off, but that's now on the way there. So that'll be a dedicated precinct, really, for sports with two stadiums there. But the big one will be a 50,000-seater one with a roof. However, that'll be a rectangular stadium, rectangular field with a view for all football codes and for the Hong Kong Sevens to move there. But the second stadium, which will be a smaller one that will seat between 5,000 and 10,000, will actually be a multi-purpose one for athletics and also cricket as well. So it won't be an encased stadium that will have a large seating complex, but only on one side of the ground, meaning that the actual ground itself will have enough space for a cricket ground as well as hosting other things. So the timeline for that's probably a little bit longer. We're looking at 2021, 2022 for that, which is a long, long time away. And looking when it was first announced many years ago, it's been a long time coming. So I'm not going to hold my breath on that one, but it's good to see that the wheels are starting to turn.
And I guess looking over a longer frame, but what are your expectations for the men's team over the next ICUP WCL cycle and then beyond that?
Yeah, ICUP's an interesting one for our guys. You know, some of them were in Hong Kong in the Premier League. You'll play 3 2-day games during the season, and that's the only non-limited overs cricket that they'll play. So I think this will be a great learning experience for them in playing with the longer forms of the game, of having to bat long periods and bowl long multiple spells. So I think on the face of it, we may not be expecting to be at the top of that tree when it comes to the end of the ICUP, but I think it's going to be a great skill and character building exercise for them that will then benefit them in the 50 over form, probably more so than anything else about batting and about bowling in those sort of conditions. Well, cricket league wise, and the T20s are played around very high expectation. We're making sure that we have our best squad available for these ties. We were a little bit short in Namibia, but when we go to the UAE in October, sorry, October in November, and then when we host Scotland here in late January, we're going to make sure that we have the likes of the Mark Chapman and the Kinshit Shah here from New Zealand and India respectively. So there's a real big focus on us really doing well in that tournament and knowing how important the World Cricket League matches are, looking at the musings around how the qualification will work for the World Cup. It more or less looks like we've got to finish in the top half of that to guarantee that we're going to be part of a qualification tournament. Now, I know nothing has actually been confirmed yet, but that's how it looks. It's got to be a big focus.
Just on a couple of those players as well, it's obviously difficult to continually get a high standard of cricket in Hong Kong. Is getting players to play overseas in first class or even high Premier League type cricket in Australia or England, such as what Jamie Exeter has done, something that is being encouraged?
I guess it's perhaps, as we were saying before, it might be a necessity in the current world for them to make sure that they can get the best cricket possible. The likes of a Mark Chapman, Kinshit Shah or Ajit Anrath is different because they've actually gone over for their schooling or their studies at university. So that's something that we can't really control. And the fact that we don't have the means to have these guys on professional contracts or likes of even a county contract means that we're not in a position to tell them not to go to these things. But if I'd be excited for guys to get involved in things like the Bangladesh Premier League and even the IPL, and a couple of those guys would be good enough to be part of those squads. So yeah, it's definitely something to be encouraged, but again, it can't be to the detriment of what the national team are trying to do. And you just have to make sure that anything that's ever done is always taken into account of those national duties, because that's what we're trying to build towards. But then, you know, some of these leagues, you know, may see that as more important than associate cricket. So it's always just finding that balance, I think.
And finally, the World Team 2020 will roll around in March. It's, I guess, a little bit away, but where do you place them for that tournament? Do you think you can qualify for the main event?
Well, you say it's March, and there I look down at the date, and it's August. So it doesn't feel like a long time away, to be honest with me. There's so much for me to get done personally, and I'm sure the guys are really excited about it. Where do I see this place? I'm guessing if we go by last tournament seedings, and I haven't seen anything yet confirmed, that it would look like it's going to be Zimbabwe, Afghanistan, Scotland and us in one pool. So, you look at that, that's a great group of T20 cricket, really, isn't it? Of teams that are almost, could beat each other on any given day. We've beaten Afghanistan and Zimbabwe the last time we played them. We beat Zimbabwe as a warm-up game before T20 2014. And Scotland's, you'd have to say, probably the form side in there and almost the favourite, the way that they played in the qualifiers. So I think any team from that pool could go through, really. It's a good thing and a bad thing, but you win two games out of the three, you're looking really good.
Well, good luck then, Tim. And hopefully we'll continue to see a lot of development coming out of Hong Kong and this team, which is very entertaining to watch in the future.
Oh, thanks a lot for having me. It's always good to talk about Hong Kong cricket. Have me anytime.
Turn to news, Andrew. There's surprisingly little news in the last month or so. There is, as usual, though, a little bit out of the United States. They've been organising the American Cricket Combine to produce a team for the Americas that included both USA players and players from other nations. And the USA cricket that is essentially now run by the ICC has organised a town hall meeting amongst stakeholders to talk through issues, which has been universally praised by everyone except the people who didn't turn up.
There was no representation from the USACA board. There were some USACA league presidents who turned up, but in the end, only 10% of the people at this town hall meeting were from USACA. you know, perhaps this is actually why it's being considered successful, because, you know, nobody from USACA was there. One sort of interesting thing about this was, I pointed out on Twitter that you don't do this for any of the other suspended members. You know, some of whom have gone on to become expelled members. You know, this wasn't done for Cuba, for Switzerland, for Tonga, etc. You know, and your Morocco were also suspended at the annual conference this year. You know, is Dave Richardson going to Morocco to address stakeholders in Moroccan cricket? Probably not. You know, this is a sign, you know, the ICC really want the US to succeed. But it would be nice if they could do this for the other suspended members. You know, we remember when Tonga was suspended and the person from the Tongan Cricket Association said they were getting absolutely no help from the ICC whatsoever to get their act, you know, get their act together, whereas the USA, you know, are getting a hell of a lot of help, and it's unfortunate the ICC can't do for the other suspended members as well.
You can see why the ICC is interested in US cricket, and because it is obviously a big market, and it is an important an associate member. It has more cricketers than just about any other associate member. So it's understandable. The board has taken a much stronger interest in what happens in USA cricket, possibly because of the influence of the West Indies, possibly for other reasons as well. And that's led to other things happening that would not normally necessarily happen through the ICC's administrative body. And if it works out, fantastic. If they spend an awful lot of money trying to organise stuff and US cricket descends once more into chaos as soon as they leave, then we'll wonder why they bothered.
Yeah, and you know, knowing the history of US cricket, especially in, you know, the 21st century history of it, chaos is always around the corner.
Some previews then, Andrew. The most significant tournament coming up is the World Cricket League Division 6, which involves 8 teams in 2 groups. The Group A, Botswana, Fiji, Guernsey and Suriname. I don't think we have great form lines for who might come through this. Probably Guernsey, though, stands out, particularly because it's been played in Essex.
Yeah, also obviously Guernsey most familiar with the conditions and most familiar with playing regularly on natural turf pitches as well. Not, I don't think any of the other teams have natural turf pitches at home, so obviously that, you know, that makes probably Guernsey favourites just on that. But again, Guernsey have a very young side, so you don't quite know what might happen. I think you'd probably expect of the other teams, Fiji to push Guernsey. They're in the same group, you could well see those two, you know, teams contesting the final in the end and being the teams to get promoted to Division 5.
Yeah, the other group, Cayman Islands, Norway, Saudi Arabia and Vanuatu. The Cayman Islands are the team that's dropped down from the higher divisions, but the form of America's teams in World Cricket League would probably just by default make them the favourites to be relegated. So, I think given the performances of East Asia Pacific sides, Vanuatu is probably the side most likely to come through here.
Yeah, and Vanuatu, obviously, as we were just saying, had a gold medal win in the Pacific Games, obviously against not quite as strong as opponents as they're playing here, but so they, you know, they're the team that's won recently, the team that's got confidence. So I think you'd expect them to do well, so, you know, they could well push Fiji or Guernsey into that final and get a promotion. So, yeah, I think it's set to be an exciting tournament, as World Cricket League tournaments seem to tend to be.
And as noted, it's been played in Essex, so any of our listeners in England should make a bit of effort to get down. It's obviously, or rather, unfortunately, being played mostly during the week, though, which will limit the opportunities to see the matches.
That's an unfortunate scheduling decision. The final is on a weekend, so hopefully your people can get down and see some associate cricket. The final is as well taking place at the county ground. Essex's home ground, so obviously your teams will get to play on a big ground, which a lot of them won't have got to play on in the past.
Also being played soon, Scotland is playing the Netherlands. in both the Intercontinental Cup and the World Cricket League Championship. And given the form of both those sides in the World 2020 qualifiers, it should be an interesting couple of matches in the Netherlands.
Netherlands often struggle in the Intercontinental Cup, it has to be said. So I think you'd probably make Scotland slight favourites there. As for the World Cricket League, I think they'll be a little bit more evenly matched, and I think you could well see that those two matches being split. We'll do a rant episode at some point.
Well, as far as we know, Andrew, that's all the tournaments there have been played for potentially quite a while, but we'll be back in a few weeks to chat further, and I'll talk to you then.
Thanks for listening.